Welcome to a recording of Titusville Free Methodist Church, a community planted in the forgiveness, freedom, and fullness of Jesus Christ. We thank you for your interest and pray that you are blessed as you listen to this relevant word.
Good morning. It's really good to be with you this morning. It's always a privilege to have the opportunity to like stand on this platform and to speak to this group of people. It's especially a privilege when that we're in the middle of what we're calling, as we see it, is that our name? As I see it? As I see it. But really, as we see it. So we're talking about the vision that God has given our church. And so it's especially an honor for me to be able to stand up here and to give you my perspective on what I think God is asking of us as a church. So I want to pray, and then we'll jump into things. Father, you're remarkable. Understatement. You're astonishing. You take our breath away. The idea that the God of the universe stepped down into a cradle and carried a cross up to the top of the hill and died for us is astounding. And I pray that as we gather here as your people, in your place, that we would hear your words, that whatever words come out of my mouth and whatever words have went into my preparation, you would transform them into exactly the thing that we need to hear to understand and be empowered to do what you want us to do in this city. I pray that you would teach us, even now as we sit in your presence, how to love the city that you love. In your son's name I pray. Amen. So the question that's before us is, what kind of church does God want us to be? What kind of church are we willing to be? Where is your heart? Where is my heart? I don't really know how to share vision. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I probably should have told you that before you asked me to speak. Hindsight, right? I don't really know how to share vision. How do you describe what you can see? I can see it. I really can. I can see clearly what I think God is asking for us from us as a church. I can see it the same way that I could see that the sky is blue and that these pews, the style, died in the 70s. I can see it. But how do you show somebody what you see? So I guess maybe I'm going to do what comes most naturally to me and just kind of tackle it in a roundabout way. So just stay with me, and we'll get along just fine. Also, I didn't give you an insert, and I'm kind of sorry about that. But also, life gets kind of busy. So you're just going to have to work really hard to pay attention to me today. But maybe what I want to tell you this morning is just that I love Titusville. That's the heart of what I want to say this morning. I really love this city. I really love this city, and how could I not? We have a rich historical base that's surrounded by beauty, and the trees grow big and strong, keep my family in business. We have such a fun mix of people, working class and intellectuals, and there's a sense of pride in this place. It stretches back, I guess, to our oil heritage. A person gets the feeling, even just driving down Main Street, you get the feeling, looking at the houses, that even if the life in this place is somewhat diminished, there was once a glory to this place. There was once something immense about this place. And you see it in the people, too. You get that feeling, right? Talking to the people from this town. There's a stiff backbone of pride in the people here. We care about Titusville. Even as we complain, even as we whine, Titusville has a dozen Facebook groups dedicated to this city, and you go through them and you're going to find person after person complaining about this town. And even as they complain, you get the sense that there's some pride in being a part of this place. I have a lot of friends from Meadville, and they mock Titusville a lot, I think, to get under my skin. And it does. is I bristle, like the little hairs stick up on the back of my neck when they mock Titusville. And it's not because anything that they say is untrue, because it isn't. Like, it isn't. But it's not all of it, because there's stuff about this place that they don't see, that I see, because I'm a part of it and they're not. They mock the empty buildings in our town. But they don't know that even in my lifetime, some of those buildings were full. And they make jokes about like the fires that have racked our city. And they don't know that like I'm friends with the people who've had to shift jobs and who've had to get back on their feet because of their fires. They don't know that I used to go to those restaurants once or twice a week. They make fun of the drug prevalency in this town. And mock Titusville because there are needles on every street corner. And meth labs in half the houses. But they don't know that I'm related to the people that are sticking those needles in their arms. And they don't know that some of my best friends have clawed their way out of that affliction. I can mock this city. I can laugh about it, I can complain about it, but I cannot hate this city because something overwhelms my hatred. Like, I don't hate this city because there's nothing to do in it. I don't hate this city because the restaurants are gone or the economy's poor. I don't hate this city because it's riddled with drugs. I don't hate this city because of political controversy, and I don't hate this city because walking down the street, people are rude to you sometimes. I can't hate this city because I love it too much. I think that there's a connection between love and understanding. And I'm not sure exactly how, like, I don't want to say that you have to understand something to love it, and I don't want to say that you have to love something to understand it. I just think those two things grow up together. Like, as you love something, you understand it, and as you understand something, you love it. I think that I love this city, and because I love this city, I understand it. And I understand this city, and because I understand this city, I love it. And I think that as we really grow to love and to understand something, I think that we begin to differentiate what belongs to it and what doesn't. Like, if we have a friend who says something that's really rude to somebody else that's our friend, then we're quick to leap to their defense. We say, oh, he said that, but he didn't mean it, because that wasn't him. That's not the real him. That's not who he is. I don't know why he said that, but that's not who he is. And of course, nobody forced him to say anything offensive, but we feel like we understand him well enough to know that that's not really who he is. That was an aberration. I love this city. And I know that, so like, I know that people hate Titusville because of the drug problem, and there's a real drug problem in this city, right? But I bristle. The hair on the back of my neck stands up when people talk about the drug problem, because I know this city, and the drug problem is not who she is. Our drug problem is not who Titusville is. Like, that isn't the real Titusville. Because the girl who has struggled with drugs for as long as I can remember, she just can't quite get past it. I know that there's more to her than that. And that guy that we know that he just can't seem to get sober, but when you can get him sober, he's so great and there's so much to him. Like, there is more to him than that. I love the drug problems in this city because I know their faces. Because I know our drug problems by name. I love the drug problems in our city. And nothing to do in Titusville? Surely you're not seeing the same city that I am. So my dad, like, there were times growing up when we'd have an hour to kill, and he says, oh, I guess we'll go to Walmart. Well, Dad, what do you need at Walmart? I don't really need anything, but might run into somebody I know. You go to a football game on a Friday, any given Friday, and you'll see half the town there. You can go to Oil Fest or the open air market or yard sale days and walk around, and you'll see that this town comes out in force because the people in our town know each other and they like to know each other. So, like, the downside is that you get a lot of people gossiping and complaining, and all of the dirty little things that come with that. But the people in our town like to be with each other. And so maybe there are sometimes limited opportunities for them to get out of their houses and do stuff. But they are eager to do stuff. There's a loyalty here. So nothing to do? That's not who Titusville is. It's better than that. The weather. Okay, the weather might really be who Titusville is. But this, I think, is what it means to have vision. I think it means to look at something and to love it so deeply that everything that's clinging to it, everything that's evil, it doesn't just disappear. Like, we see it. You'd have to be blind not to see the problems. The evil doesn't just disappear, but we begin to see it as an aberration. We begin to see it as something that doesn't belong there. We begin to hate the things that are dragging this city down because we see how beautiful it could be. Interestingly, do you notice what it is really that I love about Titusville? Like, there isn't anything that's really unique here. I think that Northwestern Pennsylvania, especially like right now as we come into fall, is the most beautiful place in the world. But I'm not delusional. I know that if I grew up in the Everglades, I would probably think the Everglades are the most beautiful place in the world. And Rocky Mountains are pretty cool. I spent some time in Cornwall. That's pretty nice. And I recognize that I'm pretty biased in thinking that Northwestern Pennsylvania is the most beautiful place in the world. I love Titusville. But it's not because Titusville's special. It's because it's my place. So I had a professor in college who he talked about the place. So he was from Tennessee, and so he talked about his home as his place. And when he retired, he was going to go live there and probably grow a farm or something because he really loved it there, and that was his place. And he would always say that was his place because that's where his people are buried. I don't love Titusville because this is where my people are buried. I mean, they are. Like, my family has been in this area for as long as I can care to go back. But I don't love Titusville because this is where my people are buried. I love the city because this is where my people are. I love this place because this is where my family and my friends and the people I don't even like so much, but I know them. This is where the people that I know and love are. This is my place. This is my city. This is my city. Do you see what I'm doing here? So I'm going to share with you for the third time this month a set of verses in Isaiah that we've been rallying around for the last 2 years. And so I've been both feet in since the moment that we were sitting around a table for a weekend in a room. And so, like, around that table, we were asking the question, what does God want from us next? And some of the people that I respect most in this town and in this church were there. And we discussed, and we argued sometimes, and we disagreed, and we agreed, and we prayed. We prayed more, and we ate. And I think I got chills when Lou McGill read these verses. I think everyone in the room got chills when Lou McGill read these verses. And each one of us was bringing different things to the table that day. Each one of us was bringing different things into these verses. And I can't tell you what was going on in everyone else's heart. Like, you heard from Matt, and you heard from Pastor Matt, and you heard from Pastor Tim. I can't tell you what was going on in everyone else's heart. I can only try to share what was going on in mine. And so you're hearing a small picture of what was going on in my heart. Let me read our passage from Isaiah 58. I'll start in verse 1. Cry aloud and do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their transgression, to the house of Jacob, their sins. Yet they seek me daily, and they delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the judgment of their God. They ask me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Why have we fasted and you did not see it, they ask. We have humbled ourselves and you take no knowledge of it. Behold the day of your fast. Behold, in the day of your fast, you seek your own pleasure and oppress your workers. Behold, you fast only to quarrel and fight and to hit with a wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice be heard on high. And then this. Is such the fast that I choose? A day for a person to humble himself? Is it to bow his head like a reed and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is this not the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free, to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and to bring the homeless into your house, and when you see the naked, to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? And then a light, your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you, and the glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. And then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, "Here I am." If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing finger, and the speaking wickedness, if you pour yourself out for the hungry, and you satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom be as the noonday. And the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire in the scorched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. And your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. And you shall raise up the foundations of many generations. And you shall be called a repairer of the breach, a restorer of the streets to dwell in. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, or seeking your own pleasure, or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. How can you hear those words and stop yourself from weeping for our city? Be angry if you must. Be frustrated if you must. And point fingers in blame if you have to. But don't we shed a tear for the city that we know is quarreling and fighting amongst itself? Aren't we full of tears for a city that is in bondage to wickedness? Like dark things roam the streets here. Drugs and alcohol and gossip and slander and hate, they're in our city. And the poverty. We know people that just can't seem to make ends meet. We know people that just can't seem to find a job no matter where they look. And we know people who are hungry. And don't we know people who are buckling at the knees under a life that just seems like too much for them? Don't we? But there's fire in those words I just read. Is this not the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free, to break every yoke, to share our bread with the hungry and bring the homeless into our home. I want to see Titusville be like a well-watered garden. I want to see it be like a city whose ancient ruins we will rebuild. I want to raise up the foundations for generations that come after me. Church, we will be repairers of the breach. We might even see Titusville reformed to its former place of economical importance in the world. We might see every storefront full of businesses. We might see opportunities overflowing even in our lifetime. But that's not what I see. So, what Titusville will look like in 10 years from now, it's still blurry on the horizon for me. I don't see Titusville 10 years from now clearly. That's not the kind of vision I have. The kind of vision I have, what I see, is more immediate than that. What I see are my friends in this city. What I want all of us to see are the people that we're living among. My favorite part of this passage, and I read it out of the ESV instead of the Message like we usually do, because I think that the Message obscures this verse a bit. My favorite part of this passage is this not the fast that I choose, not to hide myself from my own flesh and blood? Pastor Tim and Pastor Matt made the comment last week about how we, and I'm just as bad, about how we have the tendency to go to Walmart and to duck and bob around aisles to try to avoid running into the people that we don't really want to talk to, because when I go to Walmart, I don't really want to talk to people. But there's something to that idea that we're hiding ourselves from our own flesh and blood. Don't you see that the people that we avoid, the people that we avoid because we lock ourselves away in our busyness, are our own flesh and blood. They're people, just like us, with needs that are basically the same as our own. And if we went to them and we talked with them and we lived among them, we would know that. Instead, we get caught up on being busy, and we get caught up on our church activities, and we miss what could not be more clear. The people in this city need the same things that you do. As much as you need grace, they need grace. As much as you need love, they need love. As much as you need help, they need help. In fact, I think that you will find that the people in this city that you don't know, the people in the city that you don't care about, they are like you in more points than they are different from you. We can only be similar in so many ways before we have to stop calling them they at all. It's us. It's us. It's our city. And we cannot hide ourselves away from our people, because this is where my people are alive. And one day I will be buried with them, but until then, I'm going to fight alongside this city against the bonds of wickedness. I'm going to wrestle with my friends to get the straps of the yoke off of their necks, because no one should go hungry while I have plenty in this city. Not in my city, because this is my city. And it's full of the people that I love. You know why? So, I've talked for like 20 minutes, and I haven't mentioned God yet. But surely that you can see that this isn't some kind of misguided attempt at a local patriotism. I love this people because God loves these people. I love these people because God loves these people, and I love this city because God loves this city, and I love him. And I believe that what I need more than anything is Jesus Christ. He is my heart and my soul. He is my life. Like, bread matters, but the bread of life is our heart. Clothes matter, but ultimately the only thing we're going to be clothed in is his righteousness. And to be free from poverty is good. To be made rich by the abundance of grace. Like, that's the song that my heart dances to. And my heart does dance. I think you know that. I think that, because I don't think that a 25-year-old gets to stand on this platform and speak to you the way that I've been speaking to you, unless people in this congregation have stood next to me and have heard the song that my heart dances to. My heart dances. And some of you hear the song that my heart dances to because you know that rhythm. And there are people outside of this city who can only see that my heart dances and they don't know why. And I want them to know that song. I want them to hear the song of life that comes from the heart of God. So relationship is my understanding of God's vision for our church. Let's not hide the song in our hearts. Let's be close enough with the people in our city that they can hear the music of our hearts. And they can hear the music of the great playwright who wants them to know the freedom of oppression and pain in this life and eternal glory with him. We've forgotten how beautiful. We haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten how beautiful the story is that we've fallen in love with. Right? We haven't forgotten how beautiful this story is. God was complete in himself. He lived alone, but he was not alone. He was surrounded by angels who sang of his glory, and he was acknowledged and noticed. And he was in relationship with the only persons who would ever really understand him, ever really reciprocate the love that he had. The relationship and love of the Trinity was good and complete. God didn't need more. He was good. But he looked at the world. He looked at the world that we live in, and he should have hated it. Everything that frustrates you about this city was multiplied when God looked down on the world and saw evil in abundance. He saw corruption, and he saw murder, and he saw hate, and he saw evil, and he saw dishonesty, and he saw love. He saw that the world was awash in it. The world was a mess. More than that, it wasn't just that pockets of the world were a mess. He saw that the evil went through the heart of every man and woman. And he should have hated it. Every city was tainted. Every person was tainted, and God should have stayed in heaven. That made sense. Things were good there. But not for the Father God. Not for the God of relationship. Not for the God of generations, not for the God of love. He loved those people, and he knew that they could be better. He knew that we could be better, and so he left the golden city and came down to a town covered in muck in a world that would hate and abuse him, because he wanted to give love to the people that he loved. And so he healed them. He freed them from oppression. He placed himself between them and shame. He fed them, and he comforted them, and he made them laugh, and he made them cry. And he treated them like they were his people, because they were his people. And when the time came, he allowed himself to be killed by his people, the people that he loved, so that he could give them the greatest gift of all, so that he could give them himself. Dorothy Sayers said it like this. She said, "Now nobody is compelled to believe a single word of this remarkable story. God has created us perfectly free to disbelieve him in as much as we choose. If we do disbelieve, then he and we must take the consequences in a world ruled by cause and effect." The church says further that man did in fact disbelieve, and that God did in fact take the consequences. Now, we may call this doctrine exhilarating, or we may call it devastating. We may call it a revelation, or we may call it rubbish. But if we call it dull, then words have no meaning at all. So that God should play the tyrant over man is a dismal story of unrelieved oppression. That man should play the tyrant over man is the usual dreary record of human futility. But that man should play the tyrant over God and find God to be a better man than he himself is an astonishing drama indeed. Any journalist hearing it for the first time would recognize it at once as news. Those who did hear it for the first time actually called it news, and good news at that, though we are apt to forget that the word gospel ever meant anything so sensational. We have a gospel message. We have a good news message of a God who left the place where everything was in order to spend times with people whose lives were not in order at all. Also that he could talk to them. Also that he could build relationship with them and share himself with them. That is my vision for our church. You've heard over the last few weeks that handful of us are going to go down to the Admire Complex over the next few weeks and give away free cups of coffee. But you have to know that the idea isn't that we're giving away free cups of coffee. We're offering a little bit of ourselves. We'll go, but we're not going to get caught up in the details of efficiently distributing coffee, because we aren't going to distribute coffee. Nothing so cold as that. We aren't going out to do small blessings for people and small random acts of kindness. That isn't the vision. The vision is that we're going out and we're sharing a cup of coffee with people. So if I go and I end up sitting down and talking to the same person for the whole of a game, that's a victory. If we go and we only end up giving away 5 cups of coffee because we have 5 conversations, that's a win. If what we get is a nod and a name and we make someone feel known, good. Because people should feel like they matter in our city. And so when Thanksgiving rolls around, we're going to take food into the homes of people for whom it's convenient for us to bring food in. And this isn't about a charity. It isn't about people who can't afford food, although that will be true of some of the people that we take food to. It isn't about people who don't have time to cook, although that will be true for some. It isn't about shut-ins or people dealing with loss, although I hope that we can feed every shut-in. And I hope that we can make the life easier for every single person who's dealing with loss this Thanksgiving, but that's not what it's about. It's about us going and having conversations with the people in our city. It's about building relationship and not hiding ourselves from our own flesh and blood, but putting ourselves on the line. We're going to go and we're going to sing Christmas carols throughout this city. And we're going to share the song of joy that's in our hearts. And we'll give cookies to people and we'll go slow. And we'll talk to people. We'll have conversations and ask questions and pray. And they'll know our faces and we'll know theirs and we'll shake their hands. And we'll give them hugs because it's about getting out of our building. In June, we're going to go out and we're going to go to the center, the heart of the city, and we're going to feed hundreds of people fish. And that's not about giving people free food. It's about we're going to be present in our place. We aren't going to be penned up in these walls waiting for someone who wants the good news to come to us. We're going to go and we're going to sit next to the people that we love. And all of this is good, but it's not enough. Because the kinds of relationships that we can build a few days a year are minuscule. They're a jumping on point. But if this city is going to be restored, if you and I are going to stand in the breach, then it's on you. It's on you to go home, even today, and to walk over to the neighbor whose name you don't know and to maybe take a plate of cookies and say, "Hi, my name's Tyler. And I don't know you, but I figured I probably shouldn't keep myself holed up in my house. Maybe you can come over for a cookout sometime. It'd be good to get to know you." It's about stopping and talking to the people at Walmart. It's about asking them questions and being eager to hear their answers. It's about learning to care about the things that they might have to say. Because they have needs that are roughly the same as your own. And when we see them, when we see the needs, when we enter relationship with them, then we can help them break free. If you enter into relationship with people for no other reason than because you love them, this isn't an easy take on evangelism. This is harder than standing on a corner with a bullhorn, because you're going to be hurt, and God will ask more of you than you think that you can give, and many of them are going to reject Jesus even when you serve them well, and it's going to rip your heart out, and you're going to cry a lot more if we live out the vision that God has for our church. But we'll serve anyways, because these are our people, and we love them. Let's fight for our city. Let's help our neighbors experience the restoring love of Jesus. Pray with me. Father, Father, you love us, all of us, those of us who are in your fold and those of us who are not yet a part of this fold. Father, you love the people that we've grown up beside. You love the people that we would have rather not grown up beside. This is our place, and this is the place that you've put us. We don't have ambitions to be some great church. And nothing so vague as that. But I do hope that we have ambitions to be great friends to the people around us. Father, I pray that you would give all of the problems facing our city names and faces in our minds. That we would be able to look at the darkest places of our city and to not brush it aside and not say that's just the way things have always been, but to say that doesn't belong here, not in my place. And by your will and your mercy, I can do something about it just by loving the people around me and making myself vulnerable to them. Father, as you have first loved us, teach us to love one another. In your Son's name I pray.
Thank you for listening. We invite you to visit our website at t3church.org to listen to our regular podcast and find out more about all that is T3 Church.